I see in the newspaper this morning that the leader of the British National Party has just been let off the hook because he said some rather nasty things about Islam. Unfortunately, some of the things that he said were actually quite true. And what I want to do today is I want to take a closer look at Islam in relation to the world we live in today, and particularly in the end time. And what I intended to go through today was to reveal what Muslims are and what they believe, where they came from, how it all happened. But that ultimately is going to be posted on the website. So what I want to do is just mention a few quick things here, just so we set the scene. The first key point is events in the Muslim world are mostly interpreted through Western eyes. Here lies the basis for the West's almost total misunderstanding of the Muslim world. And as I go along, you're going to see just how badly we do understand the Muslim world, particularly our leaders. Islam today is basically split into two main branches, the Sunni and the Shiites. The Sunni account for something like 85%, the Shiites approximately 15%, but the Shiites are all concentrated, or most of them are concentrated, in Iran and the lower part of Iraq. And if you understand that Saddam Hussein was a Sunni, and most of the leaders around him were Sunni, they were in actual fact a minority government. So that was one of the big causes of friction in Iraq. It's difficult to know what to leave in and what to leave out. They have the Quran, of course. They say that the Quran corrects the alleged errors which crept into Christianity and Judaism. They recognized, you know, most of the Old Testament they recognized. They recognized all the prophets. They recognized Jesus Christ as a prophet. Government is interesting. Islam has no centralized government as such. It has no headquarters like the Catholics, for instance, would have the Vatican. The mullahs and the ayatollahs are the scholars and the teachers of the way. And this is one of the biggest problems for the Western nations to understand. To Muslims, Islam is a complete way of life, not just a Sunday religion. It's hard for those in the West to understand that the all-persuasive nature of the Islamic faith, every aspect of their life, social life, civil, criminal law, how to do business, it's all laid out and governed by the Quran. So there's no question among Muslims that religion and government can be separated. It's the one thing as far as they're concerned. Church and state. Because in the Western world, we've separated it completely. And in many ways, we've lost an awful lot. The real problem for most Muslims today is they've never encountered the true Christianity of the Bible. And the real problem for Christians today is that the message Christ preached has been totally corrupted. So they're both in a mess. So what I want to concentrate now is Islam, the future. Because what's happening in the Muslim, particularly the Shiite part of the Muslim world, when you start digging and having a look, is, if you didn't know the truth, very worrying. Increasing number of Muslims, Arab and non-Arab alike, believe that it is a time for a religious and spiritual revival. From Morocco to Indonesia, back to the Quran sentiment is growing. This is accompanied with increasing calls for a united, fundamentalist Islam. The age-old quest for Islamic unity has still not been achieved. They're still very disjointed because of a lack of strong leadership. Muslims around the world, however, are awaiting a leader, the Mahdi or the Mahdi, depending on how you want to pronounce it, the rightly guided one who is awaited and will appear towards the end of time to lead the worldwide community of Muslims and restore justice to the whole earth. Has a familiar ring to it. The true goal of Islam, however, was clearly laid out by the King of Saudi Arabia, King Khalid, when he addressed pilgrims in Mecca in 1979. He said, quote, "We Muslims, the more we hold fast to these eminent principles, the better are our prospects to get up and bring the world under our control." That's what they want. Nothing more, nothing less. In The Plain Truth, December 1979, in an article entitled The Arab World in Prophecy, There's a quote here that's very interesting. It says, Islam waits to be united. The role of Mahdi, the great unifier of Islam, waits a player. There is no reason to believe that the days of Mahdiism are past. Indeed, circumstances in the Muslim world appear riper than ever for a Mahdi flare-up. Even now, a Mahdi may be waiting in the wings for the opportune moment. Bearing in mind, this was written in 1979. 1980, Plain Truth. This one, it was an article entitled Islam Behind the Veil. Quote, Bible prophecy reveals the coming emergence of an Arab-Muslim confederation in the Middle East. The Bible refers to the leader of this group as the King of the South. That's Daniel 11:40. This confederation will play a crucial role in end-time events. This is turned to Daniel 11. And verse 40. I've got the whole of the Middle Eastern prophecy in my Bible on separate pages, which all gets stuck together, which is really good. At the time of the end, shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come down against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. He shall also enter into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. Now the question is, who is this king of the south? We've already seen it mentioned in this Plain Truth article that he's going to be the leader of an Arab-Muslim confederation. Again, going back to the Plain Truth, December 79. In verse 40 of Daniel 11, the prophecy skips to the time of the end. The verse found partial fulfillment in the offensive of 1896 of Emperor Menelik II of Ethiopia, who was the king of the south at that time, against the Italian armies of King Humbert, who was the king of the north. 40 years later, Mussolini invaded Ethiopia by land, by sea, and in the air. Mussolini, however, did not complete the prophecy. He did not enter into the glorious land, for example. This greater fulfillment is yet future. That's the end of the quote. There is to be a final king of the north called in Bible symbolism the beast. At the time of the end, he will be a dictator who will rule over the 10 nations of the United States of Europe. It would seem likely that the king of the south, an overall leader of the Arab Muslim Confederation, would emerge at around the same time, possibly due to the same worldwide crisis. Remember, a dictator only comes out of a drama, out of a crisis. You don't get a dictator when everything's going smoothly. He could even bear the title of Mahdi, which as we go along, you will see is almost certain. How could the king of the south push at the king of the north? Well, the Western world runs on oil. Much of the world's oil supply comes from Muslim nations, Muslim countries. If the king of the south is to push at the king of the north by cutting off, for instance, the oil supply, the whole economy of the Western world could collapse within a very short space of time. We had this in England a few years ago where there was a cut at the refineries, and within 3 days the supermarket shelves were emptying so fast of food, because all the food comes from central depots and is trucked out to all the stores, that there were fights and scraps in the supermarkets over loaves of bread, and the government had to get the army in to sort the problem out, otherwise there'd have been riots. I would think personally that if we went 7 days in that condition, this country would be on its knees. And many of the countries in Europe, and I believe America and the big cities, would be the same. Because everything's trucked, everything comes in by trucks. Cut the oil and you've got a problem. There are other things though. There could be more serious terrorist attacks. You read scriptures like in Hosea where Ephraim gets a sickness. Judah sees a wound. Are these terrorist attacks? It's not clear, but we've already seen what happens at the World Trade Center. They're now talking about dirty bombs, which are basically high explosives, which they pack around them all the worn-out isotopes from the stuff they put under our vegetables on the scanners. You collect enough of these and blow them up. It doesn't do a lot of damage. Might kill a few hundred people, maybe. But the area is so contaminated that you couldn't live in it for 50 years or 100 years or whatever. I mean, that would be nice if it happened in the middle of a major city, I don't think. But there is another aspect, and this is something that I've come to see more clearly this week, and it's quite frightening. The Muslims under the Mahdi are set to take over the world, meeting resistance from the woman who is riding the beast. In other words, it could be very much, looks like it could be a religious war. Remember, back in the 700s AD, the Muslims had virtually taken over Europe. They got into France at Tours, and the great battle that took place there with the Frankish kingdom, they were beaten. And gradually they were beaten back all the way to the Middle East, but they nearly succeeded then. You remember the Crusades? Again, it was basically a fight between the Catholic Church and Islam. What happens if this army formed behind the Mahdi and start going up towards Jerusalem? Add to that the oil being cut off. What's Europe going to do? With the woman riding the beast. Some nations are going to wake up to the fact they've got a major problem, as I'm going to show you in a few minutes. And it's a bigger problem than we, I think, realize even today. The Mahdi. Saturday the 9th of September 2006, just a few weeks back, Tehran was lit up on the eve of the birthday of the 12th Imam. There were 12 Imams or leaders from Muhammad. And the 12th is the one we're going to concentrate on because he is interesting. He's sometimes known as the Mahdi. He is said to have gone into hiding in the 10th century, but is expected to return. Although throughout Iran, people celebrated with banners and flags saying, Mahdi, the world is waiting for you. Do you see the attitude? Remember the story? The whole world's against Iran. And the rest of the West is sitting trying to beat the stuffings out of Iraq. That whole area is it's a tinderbox at the moment, just waiting to go bang. But when he returns, according to Shia tradition, the Mahdi will be 40 years old. Not 1,040, just 40 years old. How can this be? Let's remember the area of the world we're talking about. That area of the world today we call Iran used to be called Persia. Now, if you turn back to Daniel 10, you'll see something very interesting here. I've often wondered why this was in here, actually. But now it starts to show that it just may be coming a little bit clearer. Daniel 10, verse 13. This is when Gabriel was appearing to Daniel. And he said, But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me for 21 days. And behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me. In other words, Gabriel was in battle with this prince of Persia. Another spirit being. And if you make a note, you know, Ephesians 6:12, I think we all know, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness or wicked spirits in high places. I think we all remember the famous photographs of Saddam Hussein being hauled out of a hole in the ground. An empty shell. An empty shell. He had been the strutting dictator. The whole world at his feet, killed villages, plastered whole areas, used chemical weapons on his people, tortured, killed any opponents. A real horrendously horrible man. And yet he came out that hole in the ground. It was like his spirit, his demon had left him. Could this spirit of the Mahdi be, in actual fact, the prince of Persia? And I'll show you later on why I'm saying that. I've been practicing saying this all week and I'm not doing very well. President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. The BBC got it wrong, so I'm quite happy. We shall just call him the president of Iran, you know who I'm talking about. Spoke of the doctrine of the 12th Imam at an international conference in Tehran. An international conference in Tehran. He said he is actual fact a member of a fanatical sect of Shiite Islam. I might just stop here, and one thing I forgot to mention. We look at the Christianity today, and we see Catholics and Protestants, and we see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different ideas and schisms and splits. And we see the Church of God following along the same pattern very much. You can believe almost whatever you want to believe, depending on which end of the spectrum you're at. Well, don't kid yourself, the Muslims are just the same. The Sunnis have got four basic splits, four theological ideas. But the Shias have got hundreds of little splits and schisms in them. Some of them are so way out that the Sunnis regard them as heretics. Now, this Ahmadinejad is a member of a fanatical Shiite Islam, believes in the apocalypse in his own lifetime. He believes in it, right? This is what's motivating him. Some people who know him say he thinks global death and destruction is only 2 years away, and that this will be followed by the return of the 12th Imam, known as the Mahdi. These people are deadly serious. They are quite prepared to load their body up with explosives and blow themselves into smithereens as long as they can take 20 infidels with them. Horrendous. It's the only religion, as far as I can find, that actually espouses the killing of anybody who does not belong to their religion. Any infidel. Another point to remember, and this is vital, and this is what Mr. Bush and Company Limited fail to understand because they have not read the Quran. It is quite legitimate for a Muslim to lie to an infidel if it's to his advantage. So when you see them on the television say, oh, they're accusing us of, I've got this, last night I saw one, I've got this business going here, I'm not interested in that. So the man said, pull my left leg, it's got a bell on the end of it. Seriously. They might be split, but they have one God, they have one holy book, they have their principles that they stick to, they have their five prayers a day, they've got to go on the Hajj to Mecca if they can afford it at least once in their lifetime and so on. They may be split in many ways, but on the basics, they are tied together, and the minute a leader appears, they will all rally behind him. Something I found here which is rather interesting. This is a quote from a PhD, so it's got to be right, hasn't it? We must not confuse Imam Mahdi with Hadrat Isa. They are two different persons. Both will come during the last days. According to Hadith, now Hadith are the sayings of Muhammad. Imam Mahdi will appear first, and Hadrat Isa will appear during Imam Mahdi's lifetime. Furthermore, only Hadrat Isa will be able to kill Dajjal, the Antichrist. So you see what they're saying? They believe that Christ is going to come and literally work with the Mahdi to secure Islam for the whole world, and then Christ is just going to take a sidestep and leave it over to the Mahdi. Have I got news for you? Not quite right. But this is what they believe. And remember what the Bible says. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. This man believes that with all his being. And as I'll show you just now, he's putting his money where his mouth is. But in actual fact, he is only a mouthpiece for the mullahs. And the mullahs, the religious people, are the ones who rule Iran. Make no mistake about it. Now, things about the Mahdi. When is he going to come? He will rise. This again is from this PhD in the Shiite religion. He will rise at the time when people will be faced with severe conflict and the earth will be hit by a violent earthquake. Lots of earthquakes mentioned in the Bible at the end time. The universal precursory sign of the return of the Mahdi, he who guides, consists of a general invasion of the earth by evil and the victory of the forces of evil against those of good. Seems to be a little bit of a parallel there with Satan being thrown down and so forth. He will suddenly appear at Mecca. Now this is something very important. He is going to suddenly appear. All their prophecies mention he will just literally be there. Right? He will launch his revolution with a sword and will annihilate all the oppressors and unbelievers. All the peoples of the book and Muslims will submit to his authority. Now the peoples of the book are the Christians and the Jews. They get special treatment. As long as they will follow Allah, and all you've got to do is recite their basic little saying, there's only one God and Allah is his name and so on, and you do it twice in front of a witness and you're a Muslim. He will establish a universal Islamic government on earth, will thoroughly uproot the forces of injustice and tyranny, and will replace these with justice and equity. That sounds good, doesn't it? That's probably just pretty well exactly what's going to happen. You see, we think about this and we think that they're going to slaughter all the unbelievers. But Christ can't do the same thing. The people who go into the promised land as human beings who will start living under the kingdom of God in the millennium, they are going to be sifted. There will not be any rebels. And at the end of the millennium and at the end of the white throne judgment period, the people who will simply not submit are going to be destroyed. But it's going to be done in love. So Mr. Bowles was talking about last week, godly love. God does not want to see another Satan. He does not want to create somebody who's going to end up so bitter and twisted that he's going to be around for all eternity being miserable and unhappy and uncooperative and going against what God wants. And Mr. Waterhouse used to always stress this. He wants everybody who goes into his family to be exactly like him. We covered that at the feast. The main reason is that power and wealth of an important oil exporting country with a tyrannical regime which does not care about the wishes of the people has been directed in support of old religious notions. I heard thought for the day. I was coming back from dropping my wife at school the other morning. I think it was on Thursday. And they have this little thought for the day program where they come on and on the BBC. And there was a man there who claims to be a servant of Jesus Christ, mocking those who believe in the return of Jesus Christ to the earth, calling them end timers and apocalyptic dreamers. Yeah, scoffers coming in the last time. That's what our state religion's like. When the ministers are regularly being hauled into the courts for molesting kids. When many of them are openly gay, sorry, not gay, homosexual, perverts. I object to the word gay being used. I was brought up to believe that gay meant really happy. Since the election of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, I get it right, another 2 hours will have it right, as the president of Iran, through rigged elections, the notion of the hidden iman has gained a new weight. Many of the actions of the present government of Iran seem to have originated from this same notion. Get that? Many of the actions of the present government in Iran seem to have originated from this same notion. That's what's motivating Iran. For an example, the recent letter that the president of Iran sent to Mr. Bush was not based on political considerations, and it did not mean to change anything about the most important current issue in Iran, the nuclear case, where they're trying to make their own weapons. The president of Iran thinks he has a divine duty from the hidden imam to take certain measures, and the letter to Bush was one of them. I've got the letter here. It's 8 pages long, and it basically calls Mr. Bush, in the nicest possible way, a heretic. He basically says to him, this is what you're doing, this is what Christ said, I can't equate them, and yet you claim to be following Christ. And that is the basic thrust of his argument. Saeed Vahid Hirimi, got that one almost right, who is introduced as strategic issues researcher, that sounds great, doesn't it? Nice big handle here on your door. In Iran said, we have a duty to guide this ignorant superpower, the United States of America. We have a duty. He has recommended that such letters should be sent to the leaders of the important states in the world, all of them. At the moment, Ahmadinejad and his ministers claim, this is the interesting bit, they get instructions from the hidden imam directly. In the first session of the Council of Ministers, the president of Iran and his ministers signed a treaty with the hidden imam, and they asked Harandi, the Minister of Culture, to hand over the treaty to the hidden imam by throwing a copy of the treaty down the well in Jankaran. Now, it almost makes you want to smile. Except that this 12th imam, he was only 7 when he became the 12th imam because his father was killed. The Shiites were never popular back in those days. And he had to go into hiding. And the story goes he hid in this well for 70 years. So when they want to contact him, you can go there and write your little questionnaire and drop it down the well, and then you put some money in the coffers. And that's making enough money to keep several terrorist groups going, haven't they? they get instructions from the hidden imam directly. In other words, they are in contact with their spirit guide. It seems almost certain. It cannot be anything else. And people who have got this kind of backing, people who are prepared to die and think they're doing God a service, does that sound familiar, are dangerous. How dangerous are they? Well, we'll see that in a minute. Who is the hidden imam? It's a little bit of a background. According to Richard Hines, now he's another one of these experts in this sort of system, the core of the Shiite religious world's view in the hidden imam, Muhammad al-Mahdi, the guided one. He has the same name, basically, as the original Muhammad. While the stories of the first 11 imams are historical in nature, the history of the 12th imam is mystical and miraculous. He was born in 868 with the same name as the original Muhammad. And at 7, the boy declared himself to be the 12th imam and went into hiding. The Shiites believe that he hid himself in the cave below a mosque in Samarra. That is the one they put the treaty down the well at. The cave is blocked by a gate which the Shiites call Bab-al, which if you take the dash out is Babel, which is all interesting. Or the gate of occultation. Occultation is an astronomical term when one body hides behind another in an eclipse. So he's hiding, you see. He's actually been in hiding since roughly the 10th century. He says, this is one of the most sacred sites in Shia Islam, and the faithful gather here to pray for the return of the 12th Imam. The man who provided $20 million to prepare the shrine for the return of the Mahdi, the Iranian president, has reportedly told his cabinet that he expects the Mahdi to arrive within 2 years. And he is quoted as saying, we have not come to power for democracy. We are here to prepare the way for the emergence of the hidden imam. That's what's driving him. Now, I received something here from Mr. Samuel Martin, who's, I believe, Dr. Martin's son. This is Jerusalem, the 6th of the 11th, so it's fairly up to date. World-renowned Iraq expert, Professor, I wish they had better names, Baram, sketched an image of the anticipated future leader of the Shiite faction in Iraq, Mustada al-Sadr. Now, you've probably heard this name on the news occasionally. Mustada al-Sadr. Keep it in mind, you will probably be hearing a lot more about it. He is somewhere between 28 and 32 years of age, is the son of an Ayatollah who was murdered, most likely in the hands of Saddam Hussein's guard, but has no religious position. His power is derived from the militia he heads. When you hear of this slaughter every day, of bombs going off and 60 killed in a marketplace, this is the man behind it, or behind most of it. He has created this militia from the poorest people in Iran. They are young people between 15 and 30 on average who have nothing else. They have no education, no finances, and no future outside the militia. They are outcasts. Even in Iran, they are outcasts. But this rabble goes after him in hordes, ready to die for him. He appears to have inherited an extensive financial reserve from his father, including schools, religious centres, and welfare centres. Sounds a bit like Osama bin Laden, who incidentally is a Sunni. But they also have similar teachings. Not quite parallel. Evidently, their Mahdi is going to appear in Damascus. But, you know, what's a few miles between friends, yeah? In addition, he gave people hope about the coming of the Mahdi. You see what he's doing? He even calls his militia the Mahdi Army. Now, one of the prophecies about this Mahdi is that he will appear suddenly at Mecca. And there will be 313 of the closest people there ready to greet him. But within a day, there will be a massive army at his disposal. And he will immediately go forth to begin the struggle to turn the whole world to Islam by the sword. As I say, there's a man just gone through a 12-month court case because he said something like that. But I'm sorry, it's in the book. It's in their book. So if they want to argue about it. Interestingly enough, it's not the Muslims who are doing the arguing. It's our own people. Why? Because they are totally deceived. They're totally deceived. How totally? In the days following 9/11, President Bush assured America the world that Islam was a religion of peace. Condoleezza Rice recently said, speaking of course in the Middle East, in a Muslim country, she believed Islam was a religion of peace. Mr. Tony Blair has parroted the same idea, as has ex-President Bill Clinton. He's trying to boost his wife's hopes of becoming the next president of the United States. I just wondered about that when I heard that the House of Representatives in America is now led by a woman. A very capable woman, no doubt, but nevertheless a woman. What a turn up if in, 2 years' time, the American elections? 2 years again, we're talking 2 years, the same time. What happens if Hillary Clinton becomes president of the United States of America? And the Bible talks in Isaiah 2 about children are their oppressors and women rule over them. What if Mr. Cameron isn't the next one? Maybe there's another lady lurking in the wings over here. Who knows? President Bush assured America and the world that Islam was a religion of peace and that the violent followers of Osama bin Laden had twisted the true Muslim faith. Acting on this false belief, President Bush and other Western leaders sent troops to the Middle East in an effort to bring freedom and democracy to the Muslim world and incidentally secure the oil supply to the West. President Bush has been deceived, just as the rest of the world has. Revelation 12, verse 9. We all know the scripture. The devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. And this is something that is almost impossible to convince anybody of. Because as a deceived person does not know they're deceived. But he's gone off into that area now. They've got rid of Saddam Hussein. It looks like that he may very well die very shortly. Whatever they do with him is a mess. If they do hang him, he will immediately become a martyr and a rallying point. If they let him live, they'll lock him up. There's always a danger somebody will let him out and he'll take over again, which has been the way of the world. We had the Mau Mau revolt in Kenya, led by Jomo Kenyatta many years ago. The British, we took him, we slung him in prison, we forgot him, let him rot. And what happened? He comes out of prison and becomes president. The same thing happened in Zambia. We had Dr. Kenneth Kaunda, as he was. He used to be in charge of making tea at a government office in Lusaka. And he committed a felony and he was put into prison by a person who later came into the church. In fact, my number 4 son's middle name is named after him. Quite a character. Needless to say, when Mr. Kaunda came to power, he had to get out of the country rather quick. So often it happens. So whatever they do to Saddam Hussein, they have got major problems. The whole world is deceived. And it's not just deceived about the truth of God. It's deceived full stop. It's deceived into believing that building house upon house is the way to go. 25 houses to the acre or whatever they're talking about now. They must have a computer that tries to work it out because you can't possibly put 25 houses on an acre. But they're going to try. You know they can't. Oh. That's the trouble, you've got an expert. Don't you just love it? You go, yeah. All right, 26. They think having a wonderful system where people live, where I live in Hailsham, and they work in Eastbourne. So they travel every day to Eastbourne. And then there are people living in Eastbourne that work in Hailsham. So they then travel all the way to Hailsham. And of course, this problem exists all over the country. You have people living in Bristol who work in London and commute every day. 4 hours, each, 2 hours each way on the train. Using up, I might add, an awful lot of oil. You see, the world we live in is totally deceived in every aspect. Muslims don't want freedom and democracy. They regard the West's idea of freedom and democracy as satanic. They want an Islamic world where all unbelievers will be exterminated. You talk about ethnic cleansing. You'll either recite your little Didi and become a Muslim, or you'll find yourself dead. So are we going over the top? Well, got an article here. The Rape of Europe, from the desk of Paul Bellin, Wednesday, 11th, yeah. About a month ago. The German author, Hendrik M. Vrude, recently told the Dutch newspaper, Die Volkskrant, that young Europeans who love freedom better emigrate. Europe as we know it will no longer exist 20 years from now. Why? Europe is turning Muslim. As Bruder is 60 years old, he is not going to emigrate himself. He said, I'm too old. However, he urged young people to get out and move to Australia or New Zealand. This is the only option that they have if they want to avoid the plagues that will turn this continent uninhabitable. This is all in the public domain. And his conclusion at the end of all this is, our governments are failing us for not protecting us from this invasion, and they seem to be willing accomplices. But someone strong in each of the Western nations must arise and lead the free peoples ruthlessly waging war against the tyranny of Islam. We need to protect and preserve all that we have. We need to be willing to fight for, and when fighting against tyranny, we must be willing to kill for it. You see, this is the reaction against Islam. 10 nations give their power to the beast, but was it 1 hour? Why? Could it possibly be because of Islam in their countries? This man also makes an... somebody here had submitted a blog, and he says, Europe may or may not finally stand up and fight Islam. Who knows? But if they do, how they do it matters a great deal. Without a knowledge of Christ, Europe will just produce another Hitler or Stalin, another rational, scientific, progressive leader who will do the dirty deeds and create a Europe that is just as bad as what the mullahs would create. Isn't that what's going to happen? The beast and the false prophet. The woman riding the beast. The God vacuum. America and the barbarian hordes. Sounds good, doesn't it? In the Old Testament of the Bible, God is shown time and time again chastening the house of Israel, his chosen but often disobedient people, by allowing barbarians to invade and plunder their cities and put many of them to the sword. It says down further, he says, we are fond of praising our World War II era forebears who won that terrible conflict from another form of demon-possessed expansionistic fascism. But the greatest generation was different from this generation. It believed in God. And maybe they had a form of godliness but denied the power thereof, but at least they believed in a God. He says, come again. You say we also believe in God today? He says, no, we don't, not as a nation. The World War II generation believed in God. They believed that this God was the God of the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount. They believed he created us in his image and that human life was therefore sacred, which meant we don't slaughter our offspring in the womb, nor kill off our parents when they get old and sick. They believed in biblical morality when it came to sex, which meant homosexuality, adultery and shacking up were sinful and wrong. Today you can't even speak against this or you'll land in jail. How far have we come? We've gone right back down the other end of the road. Perverts are now royal game. They are protected. We've actually made laws that go directly contrary to the law of God. And then we stand up and say, you know, in America, on all their dollar bills, it says, in God we trust. Everybody else pays cash. When God withheld his protection from ancient Israel because of the disobedience and faithlessness of his people, there was only one possible solution. They had to repent of their pride and folly and come back to him. Do we somehow expect the Almighty to grant a different remedy to us? This is a carnal person out in the world. He sees the problem. This one's really scary. This is another professor at Haifa University. According to the experts, Shiites in Iraq and Iran are becoming more extreme under young and charismatic leadership, possessing messianic faith and unafraid of a struggle with the Western world. Unafraid to take on the mightiest nation on the face of the earth. They're not scared. And for all its power, America is not doing too well down there. And us along with it, of course. It's talking about the president of Iran and also the Shiite leader Mustada al-Sadr. He says both figures are religious extremists who believe in the coming of the Mahdi, the Shiite equivalent of the Messiah. They attack Israel ceaselessly. It is granted there have always been such attacks, but not with the intensity that's going on now. And here's the bit I want to read, because this is interesting in view of the present situation there. One approach, this is talking about the Mahdi coming back, they are trying to engineer this event. It says one approach to bring about the Mahdi is a judgment day war. Remember, the Mahdi is going to return when there's a war on, when there's been a massive earthquake. This is their view, obviously. A time of great trouble, he's going to return. So he says one approach to bring about the Mahdi is a judgment day war, an attempt at chaos and regional warfare, which Ahmadinejad seems to have adopted. In this context, he explains, we can understand the Iranian president's recent statements, for he believes that they have a direct connection to God. Change that slightly. For he believes that he has a direct connection to the God of this world. This man is, I'm sure they are actually possessed. They're certainly being guided. Do you realize what this says? He's prepared to risk taking on the might and power of the United States to force the situation for the Mahdi to return. That's how fanatical these people are. He's sitting there at the moment saying, we've now got a second nuclear facility. You want to bomb that as well? Why don't you nuke it? Make a good job of it. Because the minute something like that happens, the fur and the feathers will fly in all directions. I'd like to close with a quote from Mr. Armstrong. This appeared in The Plain Truth, December 1979. And it's a quote within a quote. In The Plain Truth, December 79, this is the Arab World in Prophecy, it says, in the December 1938 edition of The Plain Truth, a full decade prior to the creation of the State of Israel, editor Herbert W. Armstrong warned that, and here's the quote within the quote, says Mr. Armstrong, in due time, all the nations of the world will be fighting over possession of Palestine and the city of Jerusalem. That's when Israel was a non-event. Nobody was really interested in Israel in 1938. The war clouds were gathering in Europe, yes, but not in Israel. And yet Mr. Armstrong came out with that then. And the writer in the Plain Truth magazine then goes on to say, events soon to occur there will have far-reaching ramifications. They will change the course of your life and the history of the world. So like everything else, we had that information going out 20 years ago. It looks like now that we're at a time when it's going to be fulfilled.